Introducing Batiste Sweat-Activated and Touch-Activated Dry Shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste Dry Shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Finally, sunscreen worthy of your skin. Sol de Janeiro's new Rio Radiance SPF 50 collection, where glowing hydration meets sun protection in a beachy and nostalgic set. Confidently embrace your glow with lightweight 100% mineral SPF body lotion, refreshing SPF body spray, and shimmering SPF body oil. Receive 10% off on your first order on soldejaneiro.com, plus free shipping with the code SPOTIFY10.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Welcome back to At the Buzzer Podcast. This is Sam Ativia, your host, and I'm joined by Ryan Oblenis from Big Cat Country. He's a staff writer, and then he's a managing editor at the Michigan State SB Nation blog, too. Ryan, how are you doing?
Hey, good. Thank you for having me on, Sam. I wasn't sure if you guys allowed Michigan State fans on, so appreciate it.
Well, that, we don't care about that right now. We're just trying to get to you because you're a Jaguars fan.
Yeah, so best of both worlds.
We have to talk to you about Laviska Shenault, the CU receiver. He was drafted in the second round, pick 42, to the Jaguars. How do you feel about this pick right away?
I mean, I'm excited about it. I didn't expect the Jaguars to take them. I did expect the Jags to go wide receiver early, so they had two first-round picks. I didn't think they'd do it at number 9, but I thought wide receiver was definitely in play at number 20. And then I thought, you know, after they took Kalavon Chase on from LSU, an edge rusher, that wide receiver would probably surely be the pick in the second round. I still didn't think it'd be Shenault, but, you know, from what I can tell, I think Jags fans are going to be very excited about what he's bringing to the table, as long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah, so you guys went with C.J. Henderson, the cornerback, and then Kalavon Chase on, who actually visited CU. So we could have had him, but then did you have a receiver in mind that you wanted the Jaguars to take?
You know, I'm trying to remember who was on the board at the time. I think Denzel Mims was available. Pittman from USC just went, yeah, and Mims fell even further to later in the second round to the Jets. So there were a couple other guys on the board, but.
Did you have Michael Pittman over Laviska on your big board?
I didn't have a personal big board, but I kind of think they're very different players. Now that Shenault is here in Jacksonville, I'm actually very excited about it, and I'm glad that, you know, I probably would have taken him over Pittman anyway, if it were up to me.
I'm mostly just teasing because we really don't like USC.
Yeah, that makes sense. Pick 12.
CU still hasn't beaten them ever.
And oh, really?
Playing them every year since 2011. So
yeah, since joining the Pac 12. Huh. They've had some down years, too.
Yeah. And Well, CU has only had one winning season since 2006 or so. So it's been rough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we adored LaVisca when he was at CU. He's like one of the most exciting playmakers that I can remember. He may be the most physically gifted receiver CU has had since like the early 90s when CU was like a legit national power.
The Cordell Stewart days?
Yeah, even before that, when they won the national championship in 1990.
Yeah.
They had a receiver named Mike Pritchard, who everybody considers like the best, most gifted receiver at CU, even though he only had like 12 catches that season, which is weird. Triple option is weird.
Yeah.
So I have some questions about the Jaguars. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so with your offense, you have Gardner Minshew at quarterback. You have DJ Chark at receiver. How do you kind of think LaVisca fits in generally with the offense, like who you guys have already?
So the Jags brought in Jay Gruden as a offensive coordinator. You know, he was the Redskins coach. He's John Gruden's brother. You know, he's, I think, going to bring more of a West Coast type system in. You know, so I expect a lot of play action. I expect the tight ends to be involved. You know, some short crossing routes, slants, stuff like that. You know, it's hard to tell given everything going on with COVID-19 and teams haven't been able to get together. No OTAs, none of that stuff is happening this offseason. So, you know, just thinking about what he's done in the past, I would expect, you know, Chenault to be involved in three receiver sets. You know, well, DJ Chark will be the number one receiver. And opposite him, you'll have, you know, they'll either put Chenault in the slot or they'll put D.D. Westbrook in the slot, and Chenault could play outside. There's also Chris Conley and a couple other options. But, you know, I think those four are going to be the main receivers for the Jaguars. And I think that, you know, for Jacksonville, they just want to get Chenault the ball any way they can. So, you know, I know at his time in Colorado, he took a lot of jet sweeps, even handoffs. He'd done wildcat stuff. You know, I think after the draft, the Jags had mentioned that, you know, all of that is in play for Chenault.
Yeah, so have the Jaguars had, like, an offensive weapon style player in the past, and how did they use him?
I mean, when they drafted Denard Robinson, I think they officially gave him a roster title of offensive weapon, but that never came to fruition. You know, Michigan players, am I right? So
I love Denard Robinson so much.
Oh, really? he has one of the best draft day gifts of all time. But it was just him on the phone, and then like some random family member or friend just pops up smiling. You'll have to search that one. It's pretty good. The Jags offense has struggled for a while now. You know, in 2017, Blake Bortles was at the helm, you know, and that was the one kind of big anchor of that team that ended up going to an AFC championship that, you know, because they had a really, really strong defense, a fierce pass rush, incredible secondary with A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey. And but even then, the offense was top five in the league. You know, people still downplayed it because Bortles was at quarterback, but they had a really strong rushing attack.
Wait, the offense was top five?
Yep, top five in rush. I believe that year they actually led the league in rushing, and they were, I want to say, a top five offense in points scored.
I mean, a lot of those points were defensive, right?
Yep. But they still had the number one rushing attack in the league. And anyway, my point is, they're at, you know, that's the way that Jacksonville has been trying to build the team, through good defense and through running the ball. So there haven't been a lot of playmakers in the wide receiver game. DJ Chark had a breakout season last year. You know, his rookie year, they kind of brought him along slowly, and he dealt with some injuries too that year. I think he only played in 11 games, only had like 14 catches or something like that. So I also wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, the Jags not throw Chenault right into the fire right away. They might ease him along kind of similarly, and then you know, that year two, you might really see kind of a breakout year from him, just like Chark had last year.
Yeah, so and Chark was a developmental pick out of LSU, right?
Yeah.
He was something of like a raw physical specimen, I guess.
Yeah, he was a second round pick. You know, he wasn't ultra productive at LSU. Some of that was on the quarterback play and, you know, other factors, but you know, he's big. He's like 6'3" or 6'4" and he's fast. So yeah, I mean, a lot of that kind, you know, a lot of picks based on guys who have physical traits are, you know, based on potential of what you think they might be able to do. And, you know, Chark, based on his performance from last year, proved them right. And I think, you know, pairing him with Chenault, you know, that could be fun for the future of this team because they're both really young receivers.
Yeah, and I mean, I personally love Gardner Minshew, but I've heard that if the Jaguars struggle this year, they're going to be looking to replace him. And depending on how badly they do, they could be looking to replace him like with a top three pick. Do you see that as a threat for Minshew?
Yeah, I'm a huge Minshew fan myself. I mean, I want him to be the man. I can't promise that he is. But if you look at his numbers from last year, you know, he won six games. Nick Foles didn't win a single start. So all the wins that the Jaguars had last year, what Minshew was responsible for, if you look at his numbers compared to all the other rookie top picks, Kyler Murray and Daniel Jones and Haskins, you know, Minshew's numbers either are better or compare very favorably to those players. So, you know, just because he's a six-round pick, I think people kind of look at him as, oh, he's not the future. You can't win with him. But I'm definitely willing to give him a try. You know, a lot of the mock drafts I've been seeing for, you know, the way too early mock drafts for 2021 that are already out for some reason are, you know, all of them had the Jaguars with the number one pick. And I just don't see it. The Jaguars have been terrible for, you know, the better part of 12, 13 years outside of 2017. They've never once had the number one pick. So not even when they were a first-year franchise in 95, they actually had the number two overall pick because that was the same year the Carolina Panthers came into the league and the Panthers ended up getting the number one pick. So I just don't see the Jags having the number one pick in being able to get Trevor Lawrence. They could have a top three and perhaps go after somebody like Justin Fields. But I think, you know, the Jaguars, I'll be honest, they're probably not going to win a lot of games this year. But I do think that they're going to surprise some people, win more games than people think. So I wouldn't be surprised if they had a top five pick. I don't think they're going to be in play for a Trevor Lawrence. We'll see, you know, if Minshew is absolutely terrible and it's just not going to work, then maybe they will have the number one pick and get Lawrence, or maybe they can package some picks and trade up and get them. They do have the Rams' number one pick next year, just like they had it this year from the Jalen Ramsey trade. So, you know, it's all in play. But, you know, I'd like to think that Minshew is going to prove his worth. And, you know, the benefit of having a six-round rookie at quarterback is that he's on a super low contract, you know, and you can use that money that you're not spending at the quarterback position to build around him with playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. So I think, you know, the optimistic side of me says that Minshew's going to get the job done. You know, the team's not going to be good this year. They're really young. But if they can kind of build that foundation and, you know, Minshew proves that he's the man that should be the signal caller, then I think, you know, I think the future is looking pretty bright in that regard. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Minshew be throwing passes to Chenault. They played each other in college, and like CU fans, we've always loved Gardner Minshew, like pretty much everybody else in the country.
Yeah, he's really easy to root for. He's got all kinds of crazy stories, and he just seems like, you know, an everyday guy.
Yeah, absolutely. He's from the South too.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah. So I was kind of curious about the Jaguars' defense, mostly because, like you were talking about, they want to build defense first, but they've jettisoned pretty much everybody. They got rid of Jalen Ramsey, got rid of AJ Bouye, Calais Campbell to the Ravens, and even Yannick Ngakoue wants out of there. Like, do you think that's an issue, or do you think this will be like a bunch of high-scoring games where we get to see Chark and Chenault racking up some possibly empty yardage, but I don't know.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, the Jaguars had that incredible defense in 2017. They thought they could win that way. It all kind of fell apart in 2018. Last year in 2019, they had the one of, you know, like bottom four, bottom five run defenses in the league. And then, like you said, you know, they traded Calais Campbell for peanuts, a fifth round pick to the Ravens, which kind of surprised a lot of people. I understood it because the team's goal was to get younger and to, you know, shed some contracts. They cut Marcell Dareus. And as you mentioned, they also traded Boye, you know, and they also traded Nick Foles on the offensive side of the ball. So that was just kind of their plan, is to get younger and get, you know, they had 12 draft picks this year and they didn't trade a single one of them away. So there were, you know, there's 12 rookies coming on. This is going to be an incredibly young team, and on defense especially too, the whole secondary is revamped. You know, they took Henderson with the 9th pick. They signed Rashawn Melvin in free agency. There's also Trey Herndon, who's going to start at the outside, who's a young guy. And there's DJ Hayden, who's the starting slot. They drafted my Michigan State boy, Josiah Scott, in the 4th round, who's also probably going to play some nickel cornerback, going to play some special teams. You know, at linebacker, they signed Joe Schobert in the offseason to play middle linebacker. That is going to benefit the Jaguars, I think, in a big way, because – that allows Miles Jack, who has been playing that Mike position, middle linebacker, the last couple seasons, and it's just obviously not a natural fit for him. He's much better as an outside linebacker. He played the Sam position in 2017, 2016, and did a very good job at that. And now, you know, the expected move that the Jaguars are going to make is to put him at the weak side linebacker, the Will, which everybody thinks is going to be a more natural fit. The Jaguars have also talked about going to a 3-4 defense or a multiple defense now this year with players like Chaisson, who they can put on the edge. And Chaisson is kind of a lot like Chenault on the defensive side of the ball in the fact that he's very versatile, so that they, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him play stand-up edge rusher in a two-point stance in the 3-4 alignment. He might play some Sam strong side linebacker in the 4-3 alignment. He might even play true defensive end with you know, his hand in the dirt. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch it. As you were saying, do I think, you know, a lot of the Jags games are going to be shootouts? I think that would be the last thing the Jaguars want, because I don't think the offense is there yet to be able to put up a lot of points. You know, but the defense is now really young and really inexperienced, and they struggled last year. So their goal this offseason was to get better against the run. They did sign some other veterans like Rodney Gunter from the Arizona Cardinals, who's a defensive lineman. You know, he could play defensive end or what they call the big end. He'll play defensive end on the strong side, and he could also move into the interior defensive line and going to play like some three technique and rush the passer from the inside on certain alignments. And they signed Al Woods, who's been in the league a long time, who they want to shut down the run. He'll play nose tackle, things like that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't think, you know, like I said, I don't see the Jaguars winning a lot of shootouts, so the defense is going to have to step up in some way, but I do expect a lot of growing pains on both sides of the ball.
Okay, so I think you answered my questions pretty thoroughly so far. I do have some other tangential questions.
Sure. So
you're in Michigan, you're in Detroit.
Yep.
So why are you a Jags fan?
Yeah, so, you know, it's a funny story, but it's also not that interesting at the same time. So when you live in Detroit, you know, you have the Lions, who, of course, I'm a fan of because they're the home team, so I root for them. But when you have a franchise that, you know, is the Lions, that has been in the league forever and literally never even made a Super Bowl, barely ever make the playoffs. They haven't won a playoff game since, I think, 1991. You know, you might want to find a new team to root for. And I was like, you know, 10 years old, I want to say, maybe 9. And there was this old video game called Tecmo Bowl on the Super Nintendo. This was right before I started getting into football. So, like, this game was kind of what introduced me to the NFL and the teams and how I learned a lot of the players and things like that. So this is like, you know, 1999, 2000 maybe, but this game was probably from 1995. And that's how I was like just randomly looking at teams, and I stumbled upon the Jaguars and their teal color and their roster and their name and stuff kind of stood out to me. So I started playing with them in Tecmo Bowl, and at the same time I started keeping up with them in real life. And 1999 was the Jaguars actually went to the AFC Championship. So this was right after that. The team was good. Sorry, what was that?
Who'd you guys lose to in that championship?
The Tennessee Titans.
Oh, you played the Broncos the year before in the playoffs then.
Yeah. Oh. You remember when the Jags beat the Broncos in 96? That was fun. 96 playoffs?
I was actually born in 97. I asked from the VHS Super Bowl video.
Yeah, I would have only been like 5 or 6 years old at that time. I wasn't watching football, but I've watched a lot of the highlights. But yeah, the Jags did go in there 96 and beat the Broncos. So 99, though, was the year that they lost to the Titans, because the Titans allegedly stole the Jags' playbook that year. Actually, the Jaguars went 14-2 that year. Their only two losses were to the Titans, and then they also lost to them in the AFC Championship game, so they just couldn't figure them out. Yeah, but yeah, so I mean, that's basically the story. I just kind of stumbled upon them in this old video game that like my dad had at his house, and started, you know, following along with them. You know, they were a good team back then. They had Mark Brunell, they had Fred Taylor, Jimmy Smith, Keenan McCardell. You know, the team was loaded, so it was fun to watch. Yeah.
Tony Baselli, too.
Yeah. Yep.
So you're also a Michigan State writer.
That's true.
So moving into that, how do you feel about Mel Tucker going to Michigan State?
Well, you know, my initial reaction was the big storyline that everybody expected was for Luke Fickell to be named the head coach, Cincinnati's head coach, so I was preparing myself for that. Then, you know, you have all these guys on Twitter who think they're reporters and stuff like that that really aren't, who you know, were saying a lot of this stuff about Fickell, you know, that he's going to sign as the next Michigan State coach according to anonymous sources and blah blah blah. And then it turns out that Fickell didn't want the job, so you know, middle of the night it's announced that Mel Tucker is the coach. And my you know, my initial reaction to that was, okay, this guy used to be, actually my first thought was, this guy used to be the Jaguars defensive coordinator, and you know, at one time he was their interim head coach.
That's so right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so I knew who he was. You know, I knew he was at Colorado, and you know, he actually started some of his coaching career at Michigan State too under Nick Saban as a graduate assistant. So he had a lot of ties to you know, things that I was interested in. I knew he was a good recruiter. He just had brought in a good class to Colorado, like a top 35 class, I believe. You know, so for me, I'm excited about it. I know that, you know, I know that you guys aren't too thrilled with him right now, given that he made that Twitter statement about he was staying at Colorado and then kind of just accepted the Michigan State job anyway, which I understand. Like, I mean, that would rub me the wrong way as a fan too. But, you know, so I'm really, so far, liking his recruiting. You know, he just brought in another recruit today, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. MSU had 0 recruits. Now they have 10. So it's been fast and furious. He just brought in a recruit from Florida today, a cornerback who's a 4-star from Rivals, 3-star in the composite. But
I think why CU fans were so hurt was because it felt like he understood the program. He understood Colorado's history, and that he was committed to the growth of the program.
And he
was also like best friends with like the head basketball coach, and had all this stuff going. He'd like yell at the refs at basketball games, and like everything like that. And he was just so likable, and I feel like a lot of fans trusted him, and it was almost like a stab in the back when he left. Because it was like, oh my God, we found our coach that's going to stick with us forever. And so I think a lot of the hate is very defensive. I personally still like Mel Tucker. That's a hot take around here, but
yeah,
I'm wishing him the best.
Yeah, and I, you know, that was also what I was going to say is, obviously this has been very different. The whole timing of everything is weird, right? Because Mark D'Antonio retired a day before National Signing Day. Nobody expected it. You know, it was strange. He had just said in like November, like after the season in a press conference, that he was coming back the next year. So, you know, that was strange when he retired. And then, so obviously Tucker was starting late anyway, you know, I think he was hired February 12th. And then you got the COVID-19 situation. Now you can't bring recruits to campus. Campus is shut down. The coaches are working out of their houses. You know, it's just really unprecedented times. But, you know, from what Michigan State fans have seen from him, he's very personable. He interacts with people on social media. You know, he's a very strong recruiter, which we like, because, you know, D'Antonio's game was more so going after lower rated recruits, and he did a very, very good job developing them. You know, he won Big Ten championships with basically low to mid 3 stars, you know, sprinkled maybe 1 4-star or 5-star in every once in a while, but, you know, those were the guys that he was built on. So far, Tucker is kind of on that same tier. In terms of recruiting, a lot of 3 stars right now, but, you know, the guys that he's going after are a lot of 5 stars, a lot of 4 stars, and he's getting guys from all over the country, Texas and Florida and New Jersey and Maryland. So, you know, this is very exciting to Michigan State fans. So that's another reason that we like him is on top of the recruiting is he's very personable. He's very real. I actually recently interviewed Darian Harris, who is a former Michigan State player now. He works under Tucker as the director of player engagement. And he just said, you know, Tucker he's real, he's honest, he's genuine. You know, what you see is what you get with him. And that's, you know, he's a player's coach, I hear too. So, you know, he's got the personality that we like, and he's got the recruiting that we like. He put together a very nice coaching staff that we're excited about. So, you know, MSU's had a couple of down seasons, 7-6 the past couple of years after enjoying a lot of success prior to that under D'Antonio. So, you know, people are excited to see what's next.
Yeah, I can't say that we wish you the best of luck at Michigan State. We do wish the best of luck to the Jaguars, and we just want LaVisca to succeed. We want to have a star.
Yeah, you know, I think for LaVisca, he will succeed in Jacksonville if he's able to stay healthy. I know that he, you know, he's very tough. That's something that the coaching staff, Doug Marrone, you know, and general manager Dave Caldwell said after the draft that they really liked about him is his toughness. You know, he's tough as nails. He's ready to run through you. You know, his versatility. I think, you know, obviously his health with all the injuries he's dealt with is the big knock on him. But like I said, I also could see Jacksonville kind of, you know, easing him along and not, you know, maybe he gets 10 touches or less a game. So he's not putting himself as much at risk.
Yeah, at his peak, he was getting 17, 18 a game at CU, which was far too much. It was like when they needed a play, it would just smash the Visca button over and over. So
hopefully – you got to get the ball to your playmakers, but –
Yeah.
Do it wisely.
That will happen.
Yeah.
And he can be more effective with less touches. So, yeah, we're really wishing the best for him. Do you have any final thoughts?
Go green.
Oh, no. All right. Thanks, Ryan. We appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. And I do want to say, too, you know, I have actually been to Boulder. Beautiful place, beautiful campus. I got engaged in Denver, so you know I got no hard feelings toward the Buffaloes.
Oh, well, that's great. No, yeah. It's just beautiful right now. This time of year, it's my favorite time of year here.
Yeah,
very. Yeah, I hope Michigan's doing okay.
you know, it snowed like 4 or 5 times in the month of April, so you know that was pretty lousy, but. You know, nobody can really go anywhere right now anyway. We're under a, you know, statewide lockdown, so it doesn't really matter, I guess. But it's starting to warm up now, so that's good.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Buzz! 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 Buffs!